Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Suryoday Small Finance Bank Limited Q1 FY 2024 earnings conference call hosted by Systematix Institutional Equities. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Manjeet Nair from Systematix Institutional Equities. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Carol. Good morning, everyone. On behalf of Systematix Institutional Equities, I would like to welcome you all to the first quarter FY 2024 earnings call of Suryoday Small Finance Bank. We have with us the senior management team of Suryoday, represented by the Managing Director and CEO, Mr. Bhaskar Babu, Chief Financial Services Officer, Mr. Narayan Rao, Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Kanishk Chaudhary, Chief Services Officer, Mr. Narayan Rao, and the IR Head, Mr. Himadri Das. With this introduction, I would like to hand over the call to the senior management team of Suryoday. We will start with a small introduction or an overview of the results, after which we will move on to the Q&A. Over to you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol and Manjeet. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of Suryoday Small Finance Bank, I extend a warm welcome to our Q1 FY 2024 earnings conference call. I trust that everyone has had the opportunity to review the presentation for the quarter ending June 30th, 2023, which was uploaded on the stock exchanges. Now, let me provide an overview of the economy, followed by industry landscape, and finally, Suryoday's performance for Q1 FY 2024. The global economy has witnessed multiple challenges such as geopolitical tensions, rapid monetary policy tightening, recent banking turmoil, et cetera. Despite these heightened uncertainties, the Indian economy has made a solid recovery and is amongst the fastest-growing large economies in the world. The Indian economy has demonstrated resilience, supported by strong macroeconomic fundamentals. The ongoing fiscal consolidation and robust financial system are setting the economy on a path of sustained growth. India's GDP grew by 7.2% in FY 2023 on the back of solid momentum and a broad-based recovery from manufacturing, mining, construction, farm sector, and services. Now, going to the banking sector, RBI has maintained the status quo by retaining repo rate at 6.5%. RBI has also mandated scheduled banks to maintain an incremental cash reserve ratio on a temporary basis of 10% on the increase of their net demand and time liabilities between May 19, 2023, and July 28, 2023, as a temporary measure to absorb the surplus liquidity within the system. Healthy balance sheets of banks and corporates are enablers for the new credit and investment cycle. Banks and non-bank financial intermediaries have been posting strong earnings and robust credit growth. The capital to risk-weighted assets ratio, commonly known as CRAR, of scheduled commercial banks rose to a historical high of 17.1% in March 2023. The GNPA continued its downward trend and fell to a 10-year low of 3.9% in March 2023, and the net NPA ratio declined to 1%. Now, turning to our operational and financial performance, we're delighted to announce that Suryoday continues to deliver steady results in Q1 FY 2024. The gross advances of the bank witnessed a growth of 24.2% from 5,132 crore in Q1 FY 2023 to 6,372 crore in Q1 FY 2024. On the disbursement front, the bank has recorded a disbursement growth of 17.5% from 1,012 crore to 1,190 crore on a year-on-year basis. As of Q1 FY 2024, the customer base of our bank stood at 24.3 lakh, a growth of 21%. This growth in our customer base signifies the success of our customer-centric approach and the ability to meet their evolving financial needs. In terms of profitability, it has been an encouraging quarter, with PAT growing more than 5x year-on-year and 22% quarter-on-quarter to rupees 48 crore in Q1 FY 2024. The uptick is mainly driven by growth, improved operational efficiency, and asset quality optimization. Now, let me shed some light on the key operational and financial metrics of Q1 FY 2024, providing a comprehensive view of our performance and the factors driving our success. On the business performance, as stated, the bank's gross advances is at 6,372 crore, out of which our Vikas loan portfolio is at 1,283 crore. Vikas loan, the bank's flagship product in the inclusive finance segment, is an unsecured business loan offered to banks graduating JLG customers, majority of which is covered under CGFMU credit insurance. We have over 2.1 lakh Vikas loan customers as of now and expanding the same. The disbursements grew by 17.5% to 1,190 crores on a year-on-year basis in Q1 FY24. The overall collection efficiency of our bank stood at 100.4%, which included overdue collections. On the deposits and borrowings, our total deposits of our bank stood at 5,722 crores as compared to 4,020 crores, registering a strong growth of 42.3% year-on-year. The bank's focus has always been on growing its granular retail deposits, which has enabled the bank to contain its cost of deposits despite a rising interest rate scenario. Our borrowings at the end of June form 25% of our total liabilities, the majority of which is from refinancing institutions that are long-term and non-callable in nature. On our distribution front, we have a network of 609 branches, of which 95 branches are deposit-focused, while 325 branches are asset-focused branches, and the balance comprises of rural centers. On the asset quality front, our gross non-performing assets have reduced to 3% in Q1 FY24 from 10% in Q1 FY23, and net non-performing assets have decreased to 1.6% in Q1 FY24 from 5% in Q1 FY23. On the earnings front, our net interest income stood at 224.7 crores in Q1 FY24 compared to 177.1 crore in Q1 FY23, an increase of 26.9% year-on-year. The net total income for the same period stood at 275.8 crores and 190.2 crores, an increase of 45% year-on-year. Our yield improved to 20.5% in Q1 FY24 from 19.1% in Q1 FY23. Consequently, the NIM improved to 10.1% in Q1 FY24 compared to 9.1% in Q1 FY23. Our cost of funds have increased from 6.4% in Q1 FY23 to 6.9% in Q1 FY24. Just to draw a comparison, the repo rate increased by 160 basis points during the similar period. Our cost to income has improved to 57.5% in Q1 FY24 compared to 58.3% for the corresponding quarter last year. Our capital adequacy ratio continues to be strong and currently at 32.7%. Our Tier 1 comprises 30.2% and Tier 2 comprises 2.5% of our capital. Finally, to summarize, looking ahead to FY24, the bank aims to focus on growing gross advances by approximately 30%, deposits by 35%, achieving a return on assets of 2.25% and a return of equity of 15%. Operationally, our key four areas of focus include product diversification, maintaining GNPA level below 2%, creating adequate contingency provisioning, leveraging digital initiatives, taking CGFMU cover for JLG and Vikas loans, building a Vikas loan portfolio of 2,000 crores, and expanding our branch network. We look forward to building upon our performance consistently and sustainably and stay focused on creating a well-governed and respectable bank. Thank you. Over to you, Manjit.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question-answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star, then one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Anil Kumar Tulsiram from Contrarian Wealth Edge. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. So the first question is, for some of the products, we hired outside agencies for collection and sourcing customers. So my question is it due to the scale of the business, and once we scale up the business, we want to do in-house, or putting in another way, are there any advantages of doing collection and sourcing in-house rather than outsourcing it? Yeah.
Anil, thank you. Our collection continues only through in-house. We don't have any outsourced collection agencies except for hard bucket collections in retail assets, but entirely our major main business, inclusive finance, is done by our own employees and not outsourced to any agency and not even outsourced employees.
And what about sourcing customers? I think we do it through DSAs, right, for secured loans?
Our entire inclusive finance customer is directly sourced directly by us, and a very small portion is through our business correspondent network. In terms of retail assets, it's a mix of DSAs and own supervision. The focus continues to be on expanding our network to source majority directly. By approximately now, probably around closer to 40 to 50% of our business comes through DSAs in the mortgage business, and probably less than 20% in our commercial vehicle business, 20 to 25 in our commercial vehicle business.
Okay, sir. And the last question is on the secure loans. So for housing and small business loan, how important is it for customers to have high credit score at the time of origination? Or in other words, are we focusing on the unserved customers with good track records or completely underserved customers with no track records in terms of credit score?
See, one of the key focus of microfinance institutions or small finance banks, which is focused on the current customer segment, is to create actually good track record for the customers. Majority of them used to be new to credit. Now, as the credit markets have expanded, closer to around 20 to 25% of our new customer are new to credit. So it's invariably, obviously, we will not like to kind of lend to customers with continued track record of default. But however, in inclusive finance business, if there has been a delayed default in the past, that is not given a very high weightage because people go through business cycles and we are very, very cognizant of that fact.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. That's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shailesh Kanani from Centrum Broking. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. And congratulations, sir, for good set of numbers. And thanks for the opportunity. So my first question is that we have witnessed uptick in yields during the quarter on Q&Q basis. What are the reasons for that? And during the last earnings call, you had alluded to increasing lending rates. So if you can update the status of that.
Yeah, I think, Shailesh, good morning, Shailesh. So by and large, our product mix has not changed quarter on quarter, and which is the reason primarily why our pricing have held up. If you look, three-fourths of our portfolio today is inclusive finance with fixed rates. So the rates have remained same as last quarter. Insofar as probable increase in rates are concerned, yes, that's something that we are evaluating and we will possibly do it this quarter itself. Given that there has been rise in rates all through the last four quarters. Insofar as the cost of raising deposits are concerned, they continue to be elevated.
So if you can just guide how we are planning to raise different products like JLG, we are in the range of 24 to 25% and for Vikas loan, we are at 27 to 28%. So what kind of what quantum of jump we can expect around 50 bps in next coming quarter?
Yeah, so we will primarily focus on Vikas loan customers. We are looking to have anywhere between 25 to 50 bps of rate hike in that particular segment.
And so basically for this quarter, the yield jump is primarily because of some repricing on the asset side, right? That is a fair assumption?
Yeah, a little bit of change of mix more on the Vikas loan side and JLG, and because of which there has been a marginal improvement in rates. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thanks for that. So I also wanted to understand, we have been able to execute and deliver on most of our factors which we envisaged a few quarters back. But on liability front, I think there is some disappointment, right? So what is our strategy on that front and how do we see this low CASA number?
No, I would not say that, there is a bit of a disappointment. It's just that our focus continues to be granular, as we have advised investors in the market throughout the past 1 year. And so it's a bit of a slow cooking, right? This quarter, if you notice, we have increased our liabilities by almost 500 crores, and all of it is granular. Largely by the deposit drives that we have undertaken across the country through our branch banking network. What we hopefully want to be able to show to you from Q2 onwards is an improvement in our overall CASA numbers as well as the CASA percentages. As we had advised and guided that we would be targeting to have a CASA well over 21% by the end of the financial year, hopefully all things going well, we will be more closer to 25% than the 21% that we had talked about.
So in light of that, how do we see the CTI for the year? We expect an increase in that?
Given that, we have, gone down the path of expanding our branch network, and like we had guided previously that we will be looking to expand on both the inclusive finance business segment as well as branch banking. We plan to have anywhere between 150 to 160 branch number of branches being expanded. That being the case, our first goal will be to, have some amount of offset from the operating leverage and be able to target a 55% cost income ratio for the financial year.
Okay, sir. Thanks a lot. That's helpful, sir. Just last question from my side. On cost of funds, how much of repricing on liability front is still pending, and where do we see the peak of cost of funds for us, and in which quarter?
My sense is that, you know, the cost of funds will peak for us in Q2. The deposit drives and the mobilization that we had in May and June will have its effect for the full quarter of Q2 going forward. As we had advised before, we have anyways baked in two rate hikes of 25 basis points each into our planning. So we would see somewhere around 25 basis points to 30 basis points of rate hike in Q2 going forward.
That's very helpful, sir. Thanks a lot and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ankur Kumar from Alpha Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Congrats for a good set of numbers, and thank you for taking my question. So my first question is on the other income. There is a good jump in this quarter. Can you please comment on that part?
So the growth in other income primarily is on account of there being a market for our PSL certificates. As you may be aware, the rates had tanked completely in Q4, but insofar as Q1 was concerned, for the last 6 weeks of the quarter, there was a market available for the SMF segment. We sold a little over 1,200 crores worth of PSL certificates at about 2% on an average, and which is the reason for the increase in the other income.
So for going forward, how should we assume this number to go in the future?
Well, you know, this market has tanked once again. Rates currently prevailing are 10 paise and less. As a management, we don't foresee significant income coming from this particular stream for the next 3 quarters. At least it's difficult for us to predict at this particular point in time.
So, exactly.
First quarter is when we'll have PSLC income, historically even last quarter. So it usually tapers off in Q2. Thank you. Frankly, it will be more opportunistic.
So this full 50 crore other income is PSL income, or is it like some part of it?
No. Around 26 odd crores will be PSL income. Rest of it will be generally from, you know, the processing fee that we charge at the time of every loan being disbursed. It will also include incomes that we get from selling third-party products.
Got it, sir. And sir, on this ARC-related 41 crore provision, you are saying that it will be reversed and will be used as a floating provision. Can you please comment on this, please?
Yeah. So the provision of 41 crores that we made in this quarter was occasioned by the new regulatory requirements starting December 2022. It basically said that we have to carry as much of provision as if the book, bad book, was never sold to an ARC, right? And that's the reason on a outstanding security receipts of around 65 crores, we are carrying 41 crores of provisioning, which is around 67%. However, when you look at our overall security receipts pool, we started with 135 crores 6 months ago. We have done collections of around 64 crores in the first 6 months. So we are fairly confident that we will be able to continue on this trajectory and have all the security receipts redeemed by the end of the year. So which basically means that as we continue collecting from this point on, there will be reduction in the value of SRs resulting in the release of this 41 crores. However, as a prudent measure, as we have indicated, we would want to see that whatever release we have from this 41 crore number, we continue to build up our floating provisions like we did in Q4 of last year.
Got it, sir. Sir, and last question is on the industry side. With elections, a lot of elections coming this year, any worry signs or all the things good?
This is what we are all used to. It keeps happening. It's nothing new. But yeah, during election time, occasionally some of the states go through a little bit of a stretch, specifically in some pockets. As of now, there are no indications across any of the geographies that we are operating.
Got it, sir. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, I'd like to remind all participants, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. The next question is from the line of Karan Mehra from Mehta Investment. Please go ahead.
Good morning, sir. Thank you for the opportunity and congratulations for good set of numbers. So a couple of questions from my end. So one of your peers has indicated that they would like to become a universal bank. So where are we on the path towards becoming a universal bank, in case you can throw some light here?
As we already stated, we are kind of have no plans at this point of time for next 2 years. And given our size and then the focus back in terms of sustaining the performance, our key focus would continue to be building a very strong franchisee. Except for the PSL requirement of 75%, we do not see any significant difference between a small finance bank and a universal bank for the segment that we are currently operating. So we would continue to focus being a small finance bank at least for a period of, as we see now, 2 years, and decide at the point of time in terms of converting, by which time some of our peers would have probably applied and would have become universal bank. Also gives a road path in terms of how to really transition.
Got it. And sir, how do we see our cost of funds panning out for the rest of this financial year?
So like I alluded a while ago, there will be a rise in cost of funds beginning Q2, largely because of the fact that, if you look at the FD rates among our peers for 1 year and above, they continue to be elevated. We see our cost of funds increasing by around 25 to 30 bits beginning Q2. But the bulk of the rate hike that we needed to absorb, we have already considered it. So I don't think beyond Q2 we will have significant rate hikes, assuming that there are no further rate hikes by the central bank.
Got it, sir. Thank you and all the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dhruv Shah from Ambika Finance. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi team. Congratulations on a good set of numbers and thanks for the opportunity. Sir, if you can just walk me through your CGFMU expense and how is it calculated once?
So typically, the premium works out to be around 1% of the total insured interest, right? So on a full year basis, we see ourselves insuring about 4,000 crore worth of our portfolio. Which will translate to about 40 crores of CGFMU insurance premium on a full year basis. In Q1, we have taken about 10 crores of it. On a full year basis, we will see around 40 to 42 crores of insurance expense on account of CGFMU.
So this 10 crores is now a recurring expense for you guys?
That's correct, yes.
Right. So second question is, your NPA, you have guided for less than half of a 0.5%. So will it be more driven by the denominator going up or will it be through the collections? And the second part of the same question is, how much write-off pool are we sitting on right now on our P&L?
Write-off pool in our P&L, can you clarify your question?
How
please?
Much write-off loans do we have right now, which we have not sold to ARC?
Which are not sold to ARC?
It will be around 500 crores odd of cumulative write-offs occasioned by the pandemic.
Okay.
To your question on how do we see our gross and net NPAs coming down quarter on quarter from here on, yes, we have taken an internal target to be able to recover from the bad book of the COVID period. But at the same time, like we have indicated, we will continue to make provisioning in our books so that over time we see ourselves having built, floating provisions in course of the next 3 quarters, which will help to bring our net NPAs number further down.
So will it be fair to understand out of this 500, even if you are able to recover 10%, that will be used for floating provision?
We have a target to recover around 10% of these 500 crores, but we will make floating provisions over and above that.
Okay, right, understood, great. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Thank you so much.
Thank you. A reminder to the participants, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. The next question is from the line of Rohit Mehta from SK Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity and congratulations on the numbers. Okay, so my first question is how do you see the collections on ground, especially in the JLG segment?
I think there has been a substantial improvement. The positively surprising is that customers who have not paid for even quite a few of months, maybe 300 days not paid, almost closer to a year, coming back and kind of even pre-closing. So I won't say there's a large trend, but certainly around closer to 5% of the customer, as was asked last time, people are coming back to be back in the credit market to kind of make sure that the track records are intact. So and other than that, on a regular basis, we see a marginal slippages recovering back. Far, far better, I would say, that business as usual as it was pre-pandemic. Our intent is to really build a one-to-one relationship. That's why we stay focused on the Vikas loan. We have not increased the ticket sizes substantially. We still work on the range of 60,000 rupees to around 1 lakh rupees max and 125 occasionally for customers who have been with us for long and who have got an impeccable track record across all other lenders that they have borrowed from, including retail assets. So the intent of Vikas loan is to really not become create a one-to-one relationship beyond lending, basic insurance like a PMJJY, PMSBY, transacting underlying bank accounts. Today, the bank accounts are used at least for making a repayment. The money flows to the savings account. We want to activate that and make it a direct relationship, in which would and also covered by CGFMU continuously. Even we do not see a large credit loss this year or next year, as is always happens in our microfinance, inclusive finance business. 3-4 years of steady and then some unknown event, very, very difficult to predict. So as Kanishka alluded to, we'll continue to make comfortable floating provision, cover ourselves quite a bit, 90% of our portfolio, inclusive finance portfolio through CGFMU, as they are mainly used for business purposes, and look at developing a relationship which is beyond just the JLG relationship. So far it has played out well, and we are very, very cognizant that we'll keep the quality under complete check and continue to focus on it, and have guided that we will have closer to 2,000 crores of portfolio by end of this financial year in the customer.
Yeah, thank you. It is pretty much elaborative. And secondly, can you elaborate more on the CGFMU scheme? How does it work operationally?
Yeah, it's a pretty detailed process. Broadly, I would say that around closer to around 74%, 73%, 72.75 to be precise, or 73 net of the GNPA will get reimbursed by the credit insurance, and the balance would be the hit that the lending institution will have to take on their P&L. The CGFMU covers all business loans, credit requirement of 10 lakhs per customer, and most of our customers in the inclusive finance segment are much lesser than that, maybe on 2-2.5 on an overall basis that they borrowed from all institutions put together. And this is, as Kanishka mentioned, is approximately 1% of the principal outstanding at the beginning of the year. And the new loans that are generated during the year, we pay 1% for Q1, 70% for 70% of 1% in Q2, 50% of 1% in Q3, and it tapers off towards the year of origination. And then subsequent year, on the principal outstanding of whatever portfolio we want to continue to cover, we pay 1% of the principal outstanding at the beginning of that financial year. So we are taking it as a cautious approach in terms of build it over a period of time. The best time to take is when we'll have to get started at some point of time, and we are factored that 40 crores as a cushioning and as a investment rather than as a expense.
Okay, that answers my question. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ayush Jain from Kaja Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so, sir, if I just understand our provisions and asset quality, we're holding 90 crores of provisions. This does not include the 41 crore in ARCs?
That's correct.
Got it. So, I mean, given that we're confident of collecting the 41 crores against exposure after provisions of 39 crores, net-net, you're expecting, you're thinking you'll use the 40 crores to cover that and be broadly covered on the GNPA pool.
Absolutely.
Is that the way of understanding that?
Yes, that's exactly the way we would look at it.
And when I look at, the other question just on the CGFMU piece, when I look at it, so 40 crores is the cost and it's 1% of AUM. So 4,000 out of the 6,300 odd crores of AUM is what's covered under the scheme. Is that a fair understanding?
By the end of the year, yes. Correct.
More?
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Manav Vichai from Deep Financial. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much, sir. I just have one question. So regarding the 40 crores that you will provide for the CGFMU cover, that I believe will form part of other expenditure. Apart from that, the provisions that you intend to make and some floating provisions as well, what kind of credit cost are you looking for FY24?
So we would typically look for around 1-1.5% of credit cost for the full year, given that we want to, you know, build up our floating provisions.
Okay, so anywhere from, let's say, 100 to 120 crores?
Yes, that would be the reasonable estimate at this point in time.
100. Okay, that's all from my end. So that means of the 54 crore that you have made in this quarter, next three quarters would be in total submission of what you have made in this quarter?
Broadly, yes. Yeah. There will be, recoveries that will get offset and so on and so forth. But yeah, broadly on a net basis, that's the kind of movement you expect to see on the credit cost.
Sure. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay, Manav.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anil Kumar Tulsiram from Contagion Wealth. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for opportunity once again. And apologies for this question. I'm sure this question has been asked multiple times in the past. So we had a tough period between 2020 to 2022 for various reasons. Would you largely attribute it to some of the mistakes in hiring the team, and if yes, what are the learnings from it? Yeah, thank you.
It's a mix. So I think we are better off by picking up learnings. I wouldn't kind of say anything specific on the team. One of the ethos that we continue to maintain, including in collection, specifically in the inclusive finance segment, is that we kind of do not really kind of make sure that we collect at any cost. But what we have seen and which we'll continue to see is that good customers do come back. And the sharper learning has been in terms of, even within the inclusive finance segment, understand the customer as an individual customer rather than only lending as a group. So which made us look as an opportunity in terms of looking at Vikas loan, not substantially increasing the ticket size, but capturing the entire household details. So yeah, I would say that probably the learnings of the past would really kind of help us in terms of building a very strong, robust portfolio, including taking a CGFMU cover, whether you call it as an expense of 40 crores or an investment of 40 crores, the very fact that we are kind of wanting to cover a majority of our IF portfolio is the learning of the past. And I think it will kind of help us. Yeah, it was I would say, pretty volatile. I would think that whatever the cost that we incurred, both in terms of profitability and in terms of reduced growth, would really help us in good stead in terms of looking at the future in a very, very consistent manner and in terms of growth.
Yeah. See, and sir, the last question is, what are the steps we are taking to increase the stickiness of our inclusive customers? Say, for instance, making our account as the primary account for receiving the subsidies, seeding the Aadhaar, or any such steps being taken? Yeah.
Which we do. So, which is, as I said, around 2.1 lakh customers now, 2.2 lakhs at this point of time, transact through our bank, at least in terms of making repayment to us. Our intent is that, can we really, which we introduced at some point of time, which is a small ticket overdraft, but since the account was not operative, there was fault line in terms of execution. Our intent is to go back for our good customers and set up a small limit, as and when they want, they take it, rather than a loan which they get only when they apply and when we give. And increasingly, as the UPI penetration is increasing, even amongst the women of our inclusive finance households, all of them are digital in terms of their financial dealings, but mostly it is the man of the house, the son or the husband who are dealing with all the transactions. Our intent is to really, can we really create our customers, which is the lady of the household, become transactional in terms of digital. The efforts are on. Now that we have these accounts which are transacting, would like to build on it.
Yeah, say one last question if I can. I think during the COVID, we introduced the OD product for the inclusive finance customers, which we suspended later on, and engineering again started. So, can you give any update or any progress? What are we doing with the OD product to the inclusive finance customers?
We haven't restarted it. Whenever we are, our intent is to really reintroduce. At the point of introducing, we'll make sure that wherever we kind of had slipped last time in terms of executing, and one of the key reasons was that the underlying accounts were not transactional. So now we'll kind of, once they become transactional, which as I mentioned again, 2.2 lakh customers, if they transact more than just repaying our loan to the bank account, we would like to reintroduce it, but not in a hurry, not with the Q2 at all.
Okay, thank you, sir. Thanks a lot for detailed answer. Thank you very much.
Thank you. A reminder to the participants, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. The next question is from the line of Shailesh Kinani from Centrum Broking. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity again. So just one question. In your opening remarks, you have guided now for 2.25% of ROA for the year. So I believe this is a slight upgradation in that from 2% what we had guided in the fourth quarter. So can you shed some light on that? Is my understanding right?
2.2 is what we are guiding. So what do you see?
No, I think, Shailesh, we should be able to keep to that number of 2.2% in terms of how things are panning out, right? And especially given how we intend to manage the rate hike that has come our way, with us being able to pass on some of that hike on to the customers, I think that 2.2 number should be achievable for us.
So it will be for the full year, right? So we probably will be having an exit ROA something in the range of upwards of 2.5.
Oh, yeah, clearly. I mean, we would want that number to be upwards of 3% towards the end of the year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. And sir, one bookkeeping question. What is the run rate for ECLGS recovery on monthly basis, and when do we expect the remaining 62 crores to come in? By what time frame?
So we have cumulatively done about 10 crores till date. We are doing anywhere between 2-2.5 crores a month. It's actually more a function of, you know, how fast the process the processing of the claims is being happening. We will pick up a little bit once our secured loan claims also start to get processed somewhere in Q3. So that's the update at this particular point in time.
Okay, sir. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Thank you. Reminder to the participants, if you wish to ask a question, please press star, then one on your touchtone telephone. The next question is from the line of Rajagopal Ramanathan from Satakosh. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Excellent results, Bhaskar, and great performance by the team. One theoretical question that I had was, based on the co-lending guidelines which the RBI has issued, does that allow only non-bank finance companies to act as co-lenders in partnership with banks? Or do you have a flexibility of a small finance bank also becoming a co-lender to some other universal bank or a multinational bank or whatever? That is one. The second question actually relates to your portfolio of customers. Now, you did mention that as a small finance bank, the idea is to get people into the formal credit channel. And therefore, even if customers may have defaulted in the past, that's not a particularly important thing. But let's assume that you have some customers who have had problems, or rather who have started banking with you, they have a credit relationship, they miss payments, subsequently you have a situation where they become NPAs, and subsequently they pay back and they may not be in a position to pay you back fully. And let's assume that that cycle ends. In the future, will you be still open to exploring credit relationships with such borrowers? That is question number one. And question number two, whether your systems are robust enough to account for the fact that you've had this experience and therefore your credit systems appropriately score such individuals and you're able to have relevant risk-based pricing. Thank you.
Thanks, Raj. On the co-lending, is a little difficult to answer at this point of time. The guidelines which got released now are specifically for PSL, with this kind of referring to NBFCs to banks, and SFBs are excluded from that for a simple reason that SFBs were constituted as a differentiated bank mainly to cater directly to the customers. However, your question is very valid. Whether the SFB can become a co-lending partner to a large universal bank or a multinational bank, yes, indeed, whenever it comes through, there is no clear clarity at this point of time. We're all trying to kind of, you know, probably ask for a little more detailed guidelines. at whenever, whichever point of time when it opens up for SFBs, I presume that we will also be allowed to kind of have the relationship of an originator rather than only on the balance sheet side. It's not clear. Are we really exploring? We keep kind of while thinking about it. We haven't really have any business plans at least baked in for the year based on that business model at this point of time. And on the credit robustness, as I kind of mentioned, we are trying and we'll kind of now today because of even the microfinance guidelines, which expects us, the lenders, to have a holistic view of the household rather than only the customer. We are building up our strengths in terms of understanding the household credit behavior and the borrowings on a holistic basis. The credit bureaus have started giving only the customer full-fledged report of the customer, not yet at the household level. As it really happens, it will enable us to have a lot more data, meaningful data, in terms of the credit behavior of the customer's household as a whole. And that will really help us in terms of looking at customers, even because our customers generally go through cycles and occasionally a delay or a default, even as you rightly said, they even go to GNP. But are the customers in touch, or when we are getting in touch, do they have at least have the intent to repay at some point of time, becomes very critical. If the intent is doubtful, if it is circumstantial, we are always kind of open and we need to be. And if it is intentional, we would rather avoid such customers in terms of taking them, even if they repay fully.
Okay, understood. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amit Kohli from A1 Finance. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. And a great set of results, truly commendable. I had a couple of questions on your asset side and growth. And I'll start with the first one. How are you seeing your retail asset portfolio grow, and after some of the headwinds in the earlier quarters, is the team now confident of delivering good quality retail growth?
Yes, I think if you pick who our experiences, we came down post-June 21, post-pandemic, we have built a pretty robust portfolio. In commercial vehicle, we have gone completely granular. We used to do around 15-20 crores of retail in a similar period last year. Currently, we are clocking around closer to 40 crores. Our intent is to really go. We have grown by around 46% year on year. And at the current run date, what we do, since they are the tenor of the loans are much higher than 1.5-2 years that we do with inclusive plans, to stay in your books a little more longer. So we presume that we will have a robust growth, not in terms of accelerating the disbursements. We will do it in a very, very programmed manner. In our small ticket home loan, which is sub 7 lakh rupees, we have built 110 crore, 15 crore of portfolio as we speak, with near zero delinquency. The intent is that can it scale to 200, 300 with almost this kind of a credit robustness or intent. So beyond scale, what we are looking at is building scale, which will ensure that the credit of the credit quality of the portfolio will be impeccable. That's, I think, is a key learning that we have had from the pandemic.
And how are you, how comfortable and confident are you with the team being set up, given that you are looking at fairly robust growth in this sector? Has the team been already set up, or are you in process?
We have now set up. I would say that it took some time. So in terms of the entire leadership team, both in branch banking, we have a new business head who has joined, chief business officer. We have similarly for the wheels vertical. And now we have also for mortgages. They've been with us, both the retail leaders, asset leaders have been with us for more than a year. And our retail banks banking, CBU has just joined us a couple of months back, 4 months back. So I think our leadership team is fully slated, and we will kind of look forward to build a much better team, even in the middle management and at the field level. And this we specifically took care when we did our salary revision exercise, that we did not benchmark for the field staff in terms of what the competition was alone. What would be that pay that will really ensure that they're very comfortable, happy to come to office, happy to go back home as a team. And we have increased that pretty substantially at the field level. The intent is that we don't want to really state that the attrition of the entire industry at 40, and hence we are also at 40. So at the field level, what can be done to kind of move it down lower than even 20%, and ambitiously work less than 15%. And the long-tenured employees who kind of stretch without really creating stress for themselves are also very productive, and also it reflects on the quality of the portfolio. So back on that, which we used to do very well, I think probably off track for during the pandemic period, we're trying to get that back.
And, one last bit on the retail assets. If I see the chart on asset quality, is fair to assume that the delinquencies and the credit risks on the retail assets are, from a loss perspective, improving significantly over the last 3 to 6 months' performance?
Yes, I think it has been. Okay, so.
Yeah, that's quite true. You know, it's, it has improved in the last 6 months and more so in the last 3 months. Insofar as our book built after June 2021 is concerned, the PARs are at industry strand levels. So we continue to be able to, you know, maintain and improve on this number for the rest of the year.
So given that you've already taken credit protection cover with CGFMU, and you've got a 41 crores ARC provision, which by your estimates largely will flow back. And I see in your asset quality table, your net GNPA after covering for the ECLGS protection, et cetera, is 39 crores. So help me to, guide me in terms of whether it's fair to conclude that your net NPA post insurance cover is fully protected with what you've already taken in the P&L this quarter. Your future risk on MFI is largely covered with the CGC MFU, for which the 10 crore cost is coming in the P&L. And your retail assets are continuing to perform better. So the credit risk on this business now is behind us in all possible ways. And when I say credit risk, I should ideally say the credit cost impact of those risks. Is that a fair assumption?
It is, but we never come to a conclusion that it's all done and it's going to be all smooth. So that is why we are continue to be paranoid. One, in terms of ensuring that our credit underwriting itself is strong, sourcing is good, retain the people, that's on one side in terms of origination. The CGFMU cover is only a protection, so we are not not looking at credit losses in our inclusive finance portfolio generated post-June beyond, and we always maintain that this is a 2% credit loss business over a period of, normalized over a period of 5 years. So few years it's quiet, it's 0.2, 0.5, 0.6, and one-off years it takes 8%, 10%. So intent, as Casey earlier alluded, is to really create a floating provision which is comfortable over a period of time. Additional layer in terms of CGMFU, is it being too extra cautious? I would say probably yes. But I think it's all baked in terms of overall numbers. We'll continue to do that.
Thank you very much and wish you good luck for many more such successful quarters. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ankur Kumar from Alpha Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thank you for repeat. Sir, my question is on the cost to income guidance. So this quarter, as we had some benefits of other income, despite that, we are maintaining this cost to income guidance of 57%. So how confident are you on that front and how should we think on that front?
So, if you look at our core earnings, they have improved quarter on quarter, and with the kind of book expansion that we have in mind, there will be a fillip to the core income from here on, which helps us, to commit that we will be able to come down further on our cost to income ratios. Beginning Q4, there will be an uptick in expenses, largely due to the branch expansion that we are doing. So let's say from December onwards, we will have slight increase in our costs, establishment costs, largely because of the branch network that comes to have a play. But at this particular point in time, we are fairly confident in being able to reduce our cost income ratios over the next three quarters.
So for FY25, will we have higher this number?
I would say that we would continue to be range bound at around 55% because, for example, whole of last year was the year of investment in our project Pragyan. So next FY25 would mean that the time is then right for us to have that operating leverage in terms of all that we have spent and invested on. But at the same time, there will be branch expansion continuing on a year-on-year basis. So at this particular point in time, medium term, we would be targeting to achieve and maintain a 55% cost to income ratio.
Got it, sir. And any thoughts on capital adequacy and when we will need raising funds?
We don't need capital right now for sure, given our adequacy is 33%, a little lower than that, right? Plus, if you look at the kind of earnings that we will have, largely driven by the inclusive finance portfolio, which is almost two-thirds of our overall book, I think we will earn capital every year that we need to be able to grow, right? So at least on the next 24 months, 30 months horizon, we don't need capital per se, even from a regulatory point of view.
But however, as we all, I mean, banks and financial institutions keep looking for raising capital on an opportunistic basis, they always raise capital when we didn't really require. So whenever there is an opportunity coming in, we are really baking in now, immediately know our capital adequacy is comfortable, including baking in for growth. Should an opportunity arise, depending on obviously multiple approvals which are required, including from board favors.
Got it, sir. Sir, on NPA guidance of 0.5, so net NPA. So do you expect GNP to reduce by collections, or we will be increasing provisions much higher going in the next three quarters?
It will be a mix of both as always, but we do not see any substantial incremental GNP building up, as kind of alluding to the previous question. We were also focusing in terms of an absolute amount beyond just the ratio being played out but purely by a denominator impact. But however, there will be business as usual marginal slippages. We do not see it to be very high, but focus in terms of collecting back out of the return of portfolio, which are collecting currently around close to 4 crores per month. Out of our write-off portfolio, we're collecting close to around 6 to 8 crores in terms of our ARC portfolio, as KC was earlier mentioning. We would also try to recover from the pool, which is GNPA written off, and probably from 4 crores try accelerating at least to 5-6 crores a month-on-month basis for the next 12 months.
Got it. So thank you and all the best.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Raj Joshi from Ace Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello. So thank you for the opportunity. So my question is, how is the disbursement in the micro home loan segment, since it's our it's one of our focus area? And also adding to that, how has been our Vikas loan book shaping up? Have you seen any delinquency or a concerns pertaining to that product?
So in micro home loan, micro mortgage segment, we do anywhere between 12 to 15 crores a month. The plan is that over the next three quarters, we are able to introduce new products that allow us to, move from micro home loans to micro LAP. Also look at slightly larger ticket sizes. So that, this business actually grows on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Insofar as your question about Vikas loan is concerned, I think PAR numbers are more or less stable and similar to what they were last quarter. So at this particular point in time, there is no sign of concern.
Mr. Joshi, you may go ahead with your question. Seems like we've lost the line for the current participant. We take the next question from the line of Manav Vijay from Deep Financial. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much, sir, once again. I have two questions. One regard to the other income. So this 51 crores, almost a 50% rise on a quarter-on-quarter basis. If you can provide a slightly explanation as to break up about this income and the sustainability as well of this income for this year.
So Manav, like I alluded a while ago, this quarter has been good because of the income we made by selling the PSL certificates, right? So we made an income of around 26 crores. Largely, on a very high level basis, we sold around 1200 crores worth of certificate at around 2%, right? So this was a good gain for us for this quarter. However, in the PSL market as it stands today, the pricing have tanked to around 10 paise. And given our experience in the last year and the year before, this is going to be very opportunistic over the next three quarters. It will be very difficult for us to give a number as in terms of how much more income we make by selling PSL certificates over the next three quarters.
Usually so, Q1 is when we get PSLC income, and to your question in terms of sustainability, usually Q1, the disbursements are also reasonably tapered, and as the disbursements pick up, we'll be back to kind of, you know, quite a bit compensating that by increased disbursement and resulting in higher processing charges as in quantum.
Okay. So, sir, in case, so let's say when you talk about the sustainability, so X of the PSLC income, 25-26 crores is what you made in this quarter, and as disbursements will move up, this income will also move up. So, for next three quarters, 30 crores per quarter would be a safe assumption to work with?
I would, yes.
Yeah.
As you would see in even Q4, it was around 34. So, 35 would be a sustainable number at back to the disbursement levels of Q4.
Okay. And my last question is, now you have sent one more notice to the exchange where you are looking to increase the authorized capital from actually from 120 crores to 150 crores. Earlier to one of the questions you mentioned that you're not looking to raise any capital for at least next 24 to 30 months because now the business itself is generating sufficient cash for you. So any thought process on as to why this move has been done?
Every 4-5 years, we increase our authorized capital adequately as well as in terms of our borrowing limits. So it's part of that exercise of once in 3-4 years that we do it. And to the capital raise, let me re-clarify. We have, Suryoday always had capital adequacy much higher than the regulatory requirement right from our first year of operation in 2009. And we always intended to have it as long as our substantial piece of a business continues to come in from unsecured business, which currently stands at around closer to 60-65%. And we intend that we'll maintain the ratio very close to 55 at least. We'll continue to be a strong player in this segment. So whenever there's an opportunity arises, then we always looked at it. And since we are listed, I would not kind of want to either say that we will raise or will not. As and when it is, there is an opportunity which is coming in at a kind of price which is good for the bank as well as for the shareholders, we will kind of consider. It's neither a no nor a yes. I would say that no, we will be neutral.
Sure. Okay. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference back to the management for their closing comments. Thank you and over to you all.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you for participating and taking your time out. We do believe that we will build upon a performance which we kind of started building consistently from the last couple of quarters. The intent is to really create a very robust, sustainable and a very respectable bank. And thank you for all your support, and we believe that we will deliver it on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Thank you very much.
Thank you. On behalf of Systematix Institutional Equities, that concludes this conference. Thank you all for joining. You may now disconnect your lines.